I was here, I don't know, with Gardner Taylor about 5 years ago. Enjoyed it very much. To be invited is an honor. To be invited back, double honor. At that time, you didn't have this remarkable facility. I'm sure you are, among the seminaries, very much envied. In a Christian envy, of course. This is remarkable. And it's good to be out where there's so much sky. I live in the mountains of North Georgia, southern Appalachia, where Tennessee and North Carolina and Georgia meet every morning for breakfast. I live there in a little cedar board and batten house on a creek. It's actually built over a creek. Our den, I guess you would call it, is right over a mountain stream. And the living quarters on one side and across the stream is my study. And we enjoy it there. I would tell you where it is, but you would want to come, and I don't need you. I don't need to fool with you. So, but when I got off the plane, I realized you have what we don't have, and that is so much sky. I thought of it when recently I was in Amarillo, and more recently now in Oklahoma. I had some meetings and went by car from Oklahoma City Airport up to Enid, and went through the little town of Hennessy and remembered my early preaching in Oklahoma. Someone in that church, the church in Hennessy, had called the school and asked if one of the faculty could go down there and preach. The minister was away, I think, doing the Lord's work in Aspen, Colorado, or somewhere like that. And so the dean asked me if I'd go down. I was unoccupied, so I went down. It's about 30 miles. Running a little late, went in the front door, rushing to get to where I was supposed to be, and an elderly man standing on the steps, as I came in, said, "Well, are you a visitor?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Well, you picked a terrible time to come." I said, "Why? What's the matter?" And he said, "Our minister's gone, and one of them fessers is going to talk." And I went in and looked for him. Caught sight of his feet as his wife was putting him in her purse. I never got to talk to him. That was my introduction to this great country. We're listening to Luke talk about the baptism of Jesus. And when all the people were baptized, and Jesus also was baptized, Luke says Jesus was about 30. When these things occurred. We're not told by Luke what was the cause of the prompting for this particular day or hour for these things to occur. The Bible is not as psychological as we are. It presents people by their words and their deeds and not a lot of interior work. So we don't know. It's left to our imagination to say that he got up early, fixed some coffee, cupped his hands around the coffee in the cold morning air as though it were a small stove, and reflected upon God, maybe, or in the evening after work, leaving the carpenter shop, walking down the road as the world got dark, a time when hope sees a star and love hears the rustle of a wing. Maybe, I don't know. It might have been going, as he did every Sabbath day, to the synagogue and heard the readings from the great prophets, especially Isaiah, and the hymns of Isaiah 40 through 55. That might have been the prompting, the stirring. I don't know. It could have been just some of his friends from Nazareth passed by the carpenter shop and said, "Won't you go with us, Jesus?" "Well, where are you going?" "We're going to the river where John is preaching and baptizing. Shall we gather at the river?" they sang as they went down the road. And Jesus shook the shavings from his apron, folded it on a bench, went to the house and said goodbye to his family, and joined them down in the heated Jordan Valley to be baptized. I don't know. The more sentimental folk among us writing about Jesus and without adequate information, which of course spurs us all to write. We don't know what we're doing. Maybe it was Mary. Maybe it was Mary, the mother, who prompted Jesus. It could be she is presented in Luke as sort of the ideal Christian, the beautiful Christian who ponders things. She's not pushy. She doesn't throw Jesus out into the showcase of the world, enter him into all the children's miracle contests in Galilee. She leaves him alone to grow. But she also was pregnant most of his growing up, as you know. For after he was born, Mary and Joseph had four boys, Simon and Jude and Joseph and James, and several girls. How many, we don't know. Their names, we don't know. I'm sorry about that, but that's the way it was then. A lot of children, seven or eight or so, after Jesus. So she was pregnant most of his formative years. How much time she had with him, I don't know. It doesn't matter. He went down to the river to pray, and he was baptized. And when all the people were baptized, and Jesus also was baptized, isn't that a strange way to say it? And all the people were baptized, and Jesus also was baptized. I wouldn't in a thousand years say it that way. I like the sharp power in the portrait of Mark, where you get the impression for a moment there are only two people in the world, John and Jesus, and John baptizes Jesus in that brief, powerful statement in Mark. The whole stage is cleared except for those two. That's the way to tell it. Or Matthew. John sees Jesus come and said, whoa, no. Now I'm not going to baptize you. You should baptize me. No, leave it alone. This is to complete the righteousness of God. Do it this way. And he did. But in that hesitation and in that recognition of John, that's the way to tell it. Epiphanius tells of a tradition in which there was a great light shining down on the Jordan River. Jerome heard of a tradition that said fire spread across the Jordan River when Jesus approached for baptism. Now that's the way to tell it. Or maybe have John say to Jesus, well, when I get through with all these people, you and I will have a private service. Because you know a lot of important people in your churches don't want to be baptized in front of others like everybody else is. Can't we just have it late afternoon, just you and me, kind of private-like? And some people say, yeah. No. When all the people were baptized, and Jesus also was baptized. You know the impression I get from that? And all the people were baptized, and Jesus also was baptized. It sounds like there's a line of people going down to the water where John was baptizing, and Jesus also. Jesus in line? I hate lines. I don't like to go in lines for food, to vote, to register, to sign up for this, to get that, to make complete the documents. Line. I don't like lines. The trouble with lines is they treat everybody as though they were the same. And all the people were baptized, and Jesus also was baptized. Like everybody's the same. If you want lines, I know how to fix lines. All the clergy line up here. All the lay people line up over here. All that live in gated communities line up here. Those that live in trailer parks come over here. Those that make $75,000 or more a year here. Those minimum wage over here. Those who have completed masters or above here. Those who have high school diploma or equivalent over here. Now that's the way they make lines. But you want just one line? And all the people were baptized and Jesus also was baptized? You get the impression that John said after each one was baptized, next! And there's Jesus. Seems like one line. Luke, unlike the others, tells us who's in line. Said the poor are there. I'm not surprised by that. The poor will show up. Somebody comes into town preaching the kingdom of God and the riches of God's grace in Jesus Christ. They're going to show up. Just that word riches. Yeah, I'll be there. New shoes, the preacher says, and a robe, and walk all over God's heaven. They're going to be there. New shoes and a robe. My, yeah. Doesn't matter if it's a cathedral or a tent spread in a Kansas wheat field with somebody over in the corner double clutching an old upright piano and we're bringing in the sheaves. It doesn't matter. They will be there. I'll tell you who will be there. The 12 million children who go to school every day in this country. In this country. Wearing clothes that were first bought and worn by somebody else. They'll be there because there's going to be shoes and a robe, and all God's children have robe. I tell you who'll be there. The 13 million children in this country who go to bed every night hungry. Mama, I'm hungry. Shh, shh, shh. Hush, child. I'm not surprised at the poor there. When I was growing up in West Tennessee, belonged to a church. We were poor. The church was poor. Couldn't afford a preacher. Everybody that just stopped by at the service station in town, we'd ask them to preach. But they all preached, "The Lord help the rich. The poor can pick cotton. They got theirs now. We'll get ours later." It was really a delightful thing. Sometimes we even applauded those sermons. The poor will be there. But Luke says the rich are there. Now, I'm kind of surprised by that. But I'm not really surprised by that. Because rich people have an awesome burden. To live under the cloud of prosperity every day. What a weighty, heavy thing to do. What to do with all of this? Because the magnificence of life's promise is lost in the poverty of its achievement. I wanted all this. I have all this. Now what? "And of all the winds that blow on love," said Flaubert, "the demand for money is the coldest and most destructive." A man like that came to Jesus one time. We call him the rich young ruler when we put all the stuff together. He's rich young ruler. Fell at the feet of Jesus. We don't know what prompted it. He might have just been to his doctor. Doc, it starts here in my chest and it runs out into my arms. I have to get up my lazy boy to get any sleep. And you think it's serious, Doc? You think you? Maybe that's why he came and fell at the feet of Jesus. Or he might have just been going home from the office. Kids on the street tugging at it. "Mister, a penny. We're hungry. Mister, would you give us a penny? Mister, would you..." "Get away, kids. You got my clothes dirty." Gets home in time to hear his wife say, as she scrapes plates of food into the disposal, "I don't know what we're going to do to get those kids of ours to eat." And he is sick of it. He's a sad, sad figure, looking for the market where life is sold. Like to buy a home? Well, you can't buy a home. We can sell you a nice house. Like to buy some rain? You can't buy any rain. We can have water pipe to your house. Like to buy a little time? Oh, you can't buy any time. We've got some nice clocks and watches here. Like to buy some peace of mind? Oh, you can't buy any peace of mind. We have some Bibles. What translation would you like? It's pitiful. Up and down the corridor of the hospital with a fistful of $20 bills, stopping every orderly, nurse, and doctor, saying, "There's a little something extra here for you. If you're in room 320, that's my wife. We've been married 41 years. Would you give her a little extra attention? There's a little something extra. Mister, your money doesn't amount to a hill of beans. We'll do what we can for your wife." I feel sorry for her. No wonder he shows up. Here he is with palace and patio, and all of a sudden the roof leaks and the rent is due. He shows up. The clergy are there. Did you notice that? The clergy are there for baptism. For goodness sake, is it possible that those who preach to others haven't themselves heard the gospel? My land, what happened? What happened? One summer, my student in Atlanta interned in a big church in North Carolina. Everybody thought he was really getting into the gravy. Went up there. He was youth minister for the summer, which, you know, meant a lot of marshmallows and hay rides and stuff. They gave him a broom closet in the basement for an office, and he said, the senior minister, we've added that word to minister now, senior minister, was about 50, 55 years old. He would pass by his door sometime. The student said to me, he said, what are you doing? The senior minister would say to me, what are you doing? Well, I'm having my morning devotions, reading the Bible and having prayer. Yeah, I used to do that. What are you doing? Well, I'm studying for the youth lesson Sunday night. I'm getting ready. I'm studying the Bible. Yeah, I used to do that. I used to do that. Remember, you're created in the days of your youth before the times come when you say, I used to do that. The clergy are there. Back in the early days when they were figuring out what were the really terrible sins, it was popular to classify sins, lightweight, middleweight, heavyweight sins. And at the top, the really, really, really terrible sins was listed among seven of them, akidia. Sometimes you hear it called acidia, but that's the Latin for it. The Greek is akidia. It means, I don't care. I don't care. They early recognized it's possible for you and for me to reach a point in our ministry when I don't care. To look at a child curled up in front of a store, cold and hungry, and say, it's not my kid. To see a recent widow under a gray shawl in a grayer world, well, it's not my mother. To see an old man sitting alone among the pigeons in the park and say, it's not my dad. Akadia. The clergy come for baptism. And soldiers are there. Luke says soldiers came. Isn't that a surprise? With the helmet and the breastplate, the buckler and the shield, the sword. What are they doing there? They are the power of Rome standing like a colossus, 1 foot on land, 1 foot on sea. All the power is here. But at night when he takes off the helmet and lays aside the shield and sword, he's just a trembling son of some mother, scared to death. And he shows up. I wonder where Jesus was in this line. Was he among the soldiers? Was he with the clergy? Maybe he was among the rich folk. I tend to place him with the poor, but I don't know. All I know is, when all the people were baptized and Jesus also, next, and the next one was Jesus of Nazareth. Some years ago, William Sloan Coffin, Bill Coffin, minister of Riverside Church in New York, we lost Bill a few months ago, great human being, great preacher. He called and said, can you preach for me on such and such a Sunday? I've got to be here, there, wherever. And I said, well, I'll be glad to. I'm free that Sunday. I flew up to New York. He said, you can stay in my apartment. It's close to the church. You can just live there at the apartment that Saturday night and walk up to the church. No problem. I'll tell the superintendent you're coming. Well, that suits me. Got there, went to the apartment. The super let me in. I went into his apartment. His marriage had failed and Bill was living alone. And it was obvious. Terrible place. It's just junk everywhere. There are pieces of paper on the floor with arrows to bedroom. There's another piece of paper to kitchen and another piece of paper to bath. I was glad for those pieces of paper. Otherwise, I'd have never found anything. It was just all one dump. Next morning, Sunday morning, I got up and went in the kitchen to get some breakfast. One of those pieces of paper on the refrigerator. Don't look inside, Fred. There's nothing there. Well, I was curious. I opened it up. He was right. There was nothing there. But underneath that piece of paper, he had written, "Go up to the church and have breakfast Sunday morning. We serve breakfast there." Oh, great. Have breakfast with the staff. Learn where I'm to stand and sit and go and do and all. That's great. Orientation breakfast. Well, I went up there. About a block and a half. There was a line. I hate lines. There was a line. Disheveled, awfulest looking group you've ever seen. The people of the street. The door opened, and here they go inside. And I get in line. Get a big spoon of scrambled eggs, a biscuit, a sausage patty, a cup of coffee. Go sit down at those bare tables. I suppose there are 250 off the street eating breakfast. I sat there eating my breakfast. Across from a man, I could tell by clothes he wore. They were expensive clothes, but he had slept in them and everything, just trashy looking. And I asked him, "Do you come here often?" He said, "Yeah, I do now." "I didn't. I didn't. My daughter told me I could live with her if I stayed sober, but she didn't want her children around a drunk old man. As long as you're sober, you can live here." And I made it a few weeks, but then I'm back. Yeah, and I said, "Well, that's too bad. What did you do before you came here?" "I was a stockbroker up in Albany. Was doing well. But the bottle got me. Lost it all." He said, "Where are you from?" I said, "Georgia." He said, "What do you do?" I said, "I'm a preacher." He said, "It gets all of us, doesn't it?" You know? And I kind of flinched at that. And I wanted to take my spoon and hit on a glass till everybody's attention was on me and I could stand up there and say, "I'm not one of you losers. In a few minutes, I'll be upstairs in one of the great pulpits of this country. And I'll be proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ while you losers will be down here waiting for your next meal." That's what I wanted to do, but I didn't do it. I didn't do it because it wouldn't have been true. I live by the same grace by which they live. We gotta get over this differences and distinctions and stuff. Listen, it doesn't matter. By that I mean it does not matter. Whether you're standing on the center podium at the Olympics with a gold medal around your neck, crying through the national anthem, or wheeled into the sanctuary in an iron chair to sit at the end of a pew at the back, it's the same. It doesn't matter if you're at the peak of your earning power or go to the post office and put your face in the window and say, "Are the checks going to be late again this month?" It's the same. Whether you bow your neck at the university to receive the doctor's hood or enroll as a 56-year-old in a class on how to read, it's all the same. I have tried and tried and tried to think of somebody I am better than, and I can't think of a soul. Now, if you're not willing to get in line, I mean, I'm not a judge. If I'm not willing to get in line, the chances are pretty good that I won't get in. Not at all. In fact, I will probably look down ahead of the line and see, as Luke says, harlots and tax collectors in front of me. But I also know in the line, when all the people were baptized, Jesus also. Next.